country of detonators. That would be, that would blow a huge deal for against their supporters and their allies. We do believe that the path to remove pressure on the people comes from more integrity and a better economy by relying on the domestic capabilities. Then the enemy would have to understand and recognize the truth, the reality, and engage into fair and logical negotiation. We have always kept that path open, and we have been engaged in countries that are remaining in the JCPOA talks. The world has not forgotten that the same president, that the same U.S. president was the one that pulled out of JCPOA and undermined and dishonored his promises. So it's not wise and sensible to test what's out, but has already been tested. But the enemy, we can, by no resort to jihadi operation and illogical behavior, and dissuaded from using, resorting to bullying. Then, only then, the legitimate interests and wants of the Iranian nation will be materialized. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, that was the speech by Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf, the head of the Iranian parliament, talking to a huge crowd. As you're witnessing, there is also the next speaker who's going to talk to the crowd right now. You're watching the live footage from the University of Tehran, where parliament speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf just gave a speech to a huge crowd. And now let us go to Urmia and watch the crowds there. You can see the streets of Urmia in the northwestern Iran, and a huge crowd there. Ever since this morning, we've had live images and live footage from all around the country, all around Iran. A lot of people have gathered in the streets spontaneously in support of the cause of Palestine to express their solidarity, unwavering support with the people of Palestine and for the Palestinian cause. Right now, I am joined by Ali Hossein, political activist in Sydney, and also Naomi Barasa, chairperson of Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement. I would like to start the conversation with Naomi. Very good to have you on the program, Naomi. Can you tell me, how has Washington's blind support empowered Israel to commit crimes with impunity in full view of the world?
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me in your studio. I would like to start by saying that any government, any state officials that are indicted by the ICC, but also whose case at the ICJ court has been concluded as genocidal, should be a government that is being held accountable by every justice-loving nation. So America supporting, blindly supporting Israel, is making Israel disregard the ruling, the opinions, and the conclusion of the cases at the ICC and ICJ courts. And it's also supporting it to give it money, and in essence watering down the credibility of international human rights mechanisms and international human rights treaties that establish these mechanisms to ensure justice whenever one state has violated the rights of another state. So So America not only provides monetary resources to buy weapons, to blow up people in Palestine, but it also destroys the very mechanisms that the UN has upheld to hold states and governments accountable during violations of human rights. So, number one, we are witnessing destruction, ethnic cleansing, and genocide unfolding in Palestine, Gaza. But we are also witnessing destruction of the very mechanisms the world has used to hold violators accountable. And I don't know what will happen after we have witnessed all this disregard by the US and Israel, ignoring every conclusion, every observation, every ruling these world courts have done. What will happen to another country that attempts to also disregard these very mechanisms?
Yeah. Right. Well, let me go to Sydney and continue the conversation with Ali Hussein, political activist. Very good. Ali Hussein is no longer with us. I'm going to go back to our Tehran studios and talk to Maryam Ozarcha. Maryam, in what ways does the observance of Quds Day inspire hope or resilience among Palestinians living in Gaza right now?
I mean, there was a time that the only voice that could be heard for Palestinians really was the Iranian voice. And Palestinians have seen over the years how Iranians have actually made a lot of sacrifices to protect Palestine in as much as it could. Iranians have always sent whatever humanitarian aids they could have. In the past, many years ago, a lot of Iranians sold their gold, a lot of Iranian women sold, and you know, a lot of women traditionally saved gold as a means of basically for future spending. And they sold their basically life's investment to help with the Palestinian cause. So Iranians have always been on the side of Palestinians, and they have actually suffered a lot because of the sanctions placed on them, in part for not recognizing the Israeli regime and not basically having ties with the Israeli regime. Now we know a lot of Arab leaders, a lot of Arab countries, they have either unofficial ties, unofficial diplomatic relations with the Israeli regime. They help the Israeli regime in various ways, such as the Saudi regime. But of course, they were supposed to, and they were even talking about normalization, but then they're basically planning for that to continue following this latest round of genocide, to not look in the eyes of their people that they are normalizing with the same entity that killed their Palestinian brothers and sisters, you know. So Iran has always been there. Iran has suffered as a result of sanctions. And also, every time you stand for the Palestinian cause, of course, on one hand, it is a price you pay, but on the other hand, it's for the benefit of the region, it's for the benefit of your country as well. The Israeli regime, for instance, has assassinated Iranian scientists in the country basically caused all kinds of sabotage operations and, you know, funded all kinds of terrorists to commit sabotage inside the country. We had Iranian EB patients who died as a result. This was before Iran was able to actually have the technology to make the wound dressing for EB patients. And because of sanctions, you know, Iran was not allowed to buy it from Sweden. It was one of the only countries producing it. And now Iran produces it. But at the time, you know, so many lives were lost and so many people made sacrifices. But Iranian leaders understood, they've always understood, that the price for not resisting is far greater. So we know as the Zionist regime is, you know, they just openly published various articles. We saw in the Jerusalem Post recently, again, they talked about trying to separate Azerbaijan from Iran, you know. So they're constantly talking about separating different Iranian provinces and basically destroying what is Iran. And it's the Islamic Republic that has kept it together as one country through standing up against the powers that have always tried to basically break the country apart, divide and conquer. We have so many different Iranian, you know, we have the Iranian nation is very diverse. We have Kurds, we have Turks, we have Arabs, we have the Fars people. We have all of these people, but they're all Iranian. and Iran has always kept this. And all of these Iranians also, regardless of their religious background, regardless of their ethnic backgrounds, they have stood for the oppressed. Before that, before the Islamic Revolution also, because of their religious sentiments, because of their humanitarian sentiments, they were for the oppressed.
Right.
But they were not allowed to basically voice their support. But following the Islamic, the victory of the Islamic Revolution, they have continued to support Palestine.
Right, ma'am. Naomi Barassa is still with us. Naomi, tell me, what role do you think the axis of resistance plays in counterbalancing the U.S.-Israeli hegemony in the region?
We must recognize that resistance is part of a people's sovereignty. So number one, recognizing that resistance is legitimate, but also number two, that if people do not resist, they will continue being colonized and continue being oppressed, and people cannot. Decolonized and with all the conditions that Israel has put on the Palestinian people, it's only the axis of resistance that can be able to help people out of that situation. So it plays a very, very important role, number one, of keeping off Israel, but also keeping off any other supporters who are likely to be supporting through bringing in weapons and bringing in all other supports that are meant to strengthen Israel in destroying Palestine and particularly Gaza at the moment, but also ensuring that food and other aid, humanitarian aid, getting into Palestine finds its way in Palestine. So it plays really an important role. But also it plays another serious role of just making sure that people in the region, countries in the region, especially those that are pro-Zionism, are reminded that they have a noble role to protect and support the oppressed, but also a role to prevent any further invasion or any support by the region to the Zionism.
Thank you for your insight and your time, Naomi Barassa, chairperson of Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement. Thank you for joining our program from Nairobi. Let us go to Isfahan and talk to our correspondent there. Very good to have you on the program. Tell me, what is happening right now around you, Farzana?
Right now, I'm in the central city of Isfahan, where a massive crowd of the Iranian people have taken to the streets and to this iconic square of Imam Khomeini, one of the main squares of the central city of Isfahan. It's been 2 hours that the Iranian people are here chanting slogans, waving flags in order to reiterate their solidarity with the Palestinian people and with the Palestinian cause. And people from all walks of life, from different generations, young and old, from different beliefs, have come to this iconic square. And of course, in different streets that enter this iconic square, they have taken to the streets to participate in the massive rally on International Quds Day. And as we know, let's not forget, and let's remember that the city of Isfahan is one of the cities that is home to thousands of martyrs from the 8 years of Iran-Iraq war, the martyrs of fighting against Daesh, and the martyrs of fighting against the Israeli regime, and the martyrs of the axis of resistance, two of them, Major General, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who was assassinated in an Israeli attack last year in the Syrian capital of Damascus, and Major General Abbas Nilforushan, who was assassinated alongside the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. And as I mentioned now here in the central city of Isfahan, a massive crowd have participated in the massive rally, chanting slogans, waving flags. And as we are actually at the time, is for the noon prayer. People are preparing to say the prayer in the iconic square after 2 hours of rallying in the streets and in the iconic square in order to express their solidarity once again with the Palestinian people. And in the International Quds Day, I had the chance to talk to some of the participants from different generations. A teenager told me that she's here, a 13-year-old teenager. She told me that she's here to, of course, express her solidarity with the Palestinian people, and she could not stand seeing the Palestinian children being massacred and being killed by the Israeli regime and remain silent and doing nothing. And, of course, her message was to urge people all around the world to come out to the streets, as Iranians do on International Quds Day, to express their solidarity with the Palestinian people and express their anger and outrage against the Israeli oppressions, against the Palestinian people. And of course, not just the Palestinian people, but of all the people all around the world that fight in the axis of resistance, the people of Yemen, the people of Lebanon, the Iranian people also, who have been a target of the Israeli assassinations and the Israeli attacks. And as you can hear now, it's the time of the noon prayer, and the people are preparing to say the prayer all together after 2 hours of rallying here in the central city of Isfahan.
Right, thank you so much for the report, Fazan Ashirin, our reporter on the ground in Isfahan. Well, we have right now David Miller with us, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher from Bristol, UK. Very good to have you, David. David, how has Iran's unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance helped disrupt Israeli regional ambitions?
Well, I mean, I am based here in the UK, and it's perfectly plain that there would be a much smaller ability of the Palestinians to resist were it not for the unwavering support over many decades of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Everybody who pays any attention to these things knows that, and they know that the axis of resistance was a thing which was brought into being by the Islamic Republic. It wasn't brought into being by any other nation. It wasn't brought into being by Jordan or Egypt or by Turkey. It was brought into existence by the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course it's suffered grievous blows in recent months in Lebanon and in Syria, but nevertheless the Palestinian people have a true ally in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And it's very plain that as we move towards an increasing level of conflict between Iran and the West, and indeed Israel, that those kinds of commitments will be tested in the very near future.
Right, David, do you believe that the genocidal war on Gaza has awakened the public opinions in the world? Because we do not see any reactions, any meaningful reactions from the governments, but the public, we see them on the ground in different cities, major cities in America, in Europe, chanting for the survival of Palestine.
Well, yes, I mean, all over the world, there is mass outrage at the genocide. Everybody sees it. Some people, of course, turn their face away. Some people in the mainstream Western media refuse to cover any, really, of the genocide and refuse to call it a genocide. But nevertheless, the people of the world see. But what's important, I think, is to understand that it's not enough for us to see. And it's not enough for us to say that this is an outrage. We have to do something. And that something means, first of all, we have to spread resistance consciousness, not just that we demonstrate, but that we take material action against the Zionists and against their war machine, both in terms of attacks on arms firms, for example, in the UK, where the Israelis' largest arms firm, Elbit, has several factories, there are ongoing attacks almost every week on Elbit. But we also need to take material action against the Zionist movement, which, of course, is helping on a daily basis to fund, directly fund, the so-called Israel Defense Forces, and indeed to help to fund illegal settlements and ethnic cleansing in the West Bank and in other places too. So yes, it's great that there is a worldwide revulsion, but we need to turn that worldwide revulsion into practical and effective action against Zionism.
Right, David. I have also in the studio with me Maryam Ozacha, our own correspondent. Maryam, you listened to what David just said. Enough has been said. Meaningful action is what we require and what people of Palestine require. What could be that meaningful action?
Now, as Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution and also the founder of Quds Day, of International Quds Day, said, if every Muslim across the world pours a pitcher of water, pours a bucket of water over the Zionist regime, the regime will be washed away by the flood. And basically what he talked about was basically every single person doing what they can and not assuming that their power is too little. The Islamic Republic has been all about telling the oppressed that they have the power to resist. And we see what the allies of the Islamic Republic have been doing, the allies that the U.S. tries to label them as proxies, but they have shown that they act independently and they are making so many sacrifices, just like Hezbollah did, just like Yemen did. And we see all of these originally small pockets of resistance, not in numbers, but small in their military power, small in very many ways. They have been able to push against the Western hegemonic front, especially in this latest round of this genocidal war in Gaza. So if everybody believes there's something that they can do, and there is, I mean, there's so many U.S. points of interest that can be targeted, can be threatened. There's so many U.S. bases across the world. If the U.S. does not feel safe, if every time the U.S. supports, the U.S. funds the murder of a few hundred, a few thousand women and children, if every time then a U.S. base also suffers as a result, if every time the U.S. murders people, the U.S. gives bombs, gives bunker busters to the Israeli regime, if it also suffers as a result, then there will definitely be a change of policy. We have seen always with the Western hegemonic front that they will continue hitting until they're hit back strong enough. And of course, you know, what we know, for instance, what the Yemenis, they have hit the U.S. Navy ships more than 170 times since 2023. Now, we talked about how Yemenis were actually, I mean, they were considered a very poor nation, but look at their power. Look at their power when they unite. So if people across the world do what they can take to the streets, they can take to social media, and we know there is a price to be paid in the West, various Persian Gulf countries. You can be arrested for your social media posts, but you know what? Basically, if you don't stop them where they are, they will come for you. They have come for you. The Israeli regime has come for American students. It has come for American taxpayer money. It has come for German students. It has come for Europeans across, like basically just across the region. So all of them will continue to suffer as a result of the Zionist regime being in place, as long as the occupation is not finished, as long as Palestinians are not free, neither is anybody else. And this is what people have to realize. And they have to also realize that they have the power to do something about it if they only believe in themselves, if they unite, if they don't fall for the British-style divide-and-conquer policies, if they don't start to fall for the Sunni Shia division, if they don't fall for the Takfiri terrorists that are supported by the U.S., you know, and start, if they stop the divisions and they stop the wars among themselves and focus on the Western hegemonic front and find out it's very clear their weak points. You know, a lot of people have sanctions. They have done major boycotts against the Zionist regime.
Right.
Millions of dollars, billions of dollars have been basically lost by the Zionist regime because of all the boycott movements. You know, there's the BDS movement. If people educate each other, there's the If Americans Knew platform, for instance. There are so many platforms that are now basically educating people about the Israeli regime's policies. So if people educate, if they organize, there is nothing that can stop them.
Right, thank you, Maryam. As our viewers are watching, the huge crowd in Urmia, northwestern Iran, gathering in support of Palestine and the Palestinian cause. Let us go back to Bristol and talk to David. David, Donald Trump, when he came into office, in his inauguration speech, he said that he's going to be remembered as a president of peace, a peacemaker. And he took a messianic tone in saying those and in claiming those. Why is it that instead of pushing Israel to move forward with the second phase of the ceasefire, he's ratified these attacks? And the other thing is that when I look at Gaza and the current situation, that I don't see any military objective left for Israel to achieve. What are they looking for? Are they looking for depopulating the entire Gaza and repopulating of the settlers?
Well, the answer to that, of course, is yes. That's what they're looking for. That's what settler colonialism is. That's what settler colonialism does. It either has to be defeated or it will eliminate all of the natives or as many of the natives as can make no difference to its power. That's what they're doing in Gaza. They're trying to kill enough people such that they can force the remaining people across the border into Egypt or into transport them across the Jordan or wherever. And then, of course, you know, disperse them around the world. That's what they're trying to do. We know that. That's what the ethnic cleansing, the purpose of the ethnic cleansing is, so that there will be no more Palestinians. That, I mean, let's be stark about that. Is Trump a peacemaker? Well, of course not. I mean, he stands on a platform of making America great again, and many people in America have bought into that. They think that America will become the land of milk and honey, as it used to be in their minds, and that, of course, Trump will remove NATO and American forces from Ukraine, and that will seal his reputation as a peacemaker. It's a lie. It's a lie. He is the president to make Israel great, and to make a greater Israel. That's the purpose of the Trump administration. Every single official that he has appointed has been massively pro-Israel. And when one of these officials, who went to talk directly to Hamas without telling the Israelis, when he went to talk to Hamas and he found them to be much more reasonable than he had felt that they would be, he was immediately sacked from his post. So even pro-Israel people in the Trump administration who place a one step out of line, out of the line determined by Benjamin Netanyahu, will be sacked. This is a pro-Israel government, a government determined to pursue the ethnic cleansing and genocide of the Israeli regime. And that's why, of course, he burbles on, as he does in his own unique style, about condos and beachfront apartments in Gaza. That's their vision. Their vision is that they will be building on the ruins of the genocide, on the ruins of the dead bodies of the genocide. They will be building new hotels, and they will make a killing, literally a killing, out of this. That's what his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been investing in, with the Saudis, of course, and that's what they intend to do. The only way to stop this is to defeat them. They must be defeated. I mean, the Zionists must be defeated, and US imperialism must be defeated, which of course is why it's so important what is happening in Yemen with the ongoing resistance to the US empire by Ansar al-Assad, the government there. I mean, incredibly important that that continues.
Right, David. I'm now joined by Mohsen Saleh, academic and political analyst from Beirut. Very good to have you on the program, sir. Mohsen, you were listening to what David was saying. How can this Zionism, how can this mindset be defeated?
Well, first, good morning to you and to all the audiences and to your guests. I guess it's the best way, first of all, to defend the region from this media of the United States and some of the Arabs and some of the Arab regimes, of course, and of course the Israeli one, trying to eliminate the rights of the Palestinians and try to center and focus on the Israeli democracy or Israeli occupation as a democratic state in the region. So you have to unite the whole community here around the Palestinian territories in order to, first of all, to boycott the Israelis, second, to cut all kinds of relations with the Israelis, those, especially those who made the treaties, Egypt, Jordan, and some of the Palestinians, I mean the PLO in Ramallah, and other countries in the Gulf. So you have to unite the Ummah, the freedom fighters in this world, in order to put an end to this not only media, to this occupation in all Palestine, and especially in Gaza and in the West Bank, who are trying to kick out, to eliminate the Palestinians from these from their land, from their homes. So we are here talking about the diplomatic movement. We are talking about military movement. We are talking about economic also situation in the region, that they should boycott this entity and its usurpation. We are talking about also the cultural situation. So the Arab regimes, at least the Arab regimes, they would not go into naturalization and considering that an Abrahamic accord. That won't benefit the Palestinians and their issue. So the Arabs, the Muslims, and the people in the world that who are eager to see a Palestinian entity, a Palestinian freedom, a Palestinian sovereignty in Palestine. In all their land, there are Palestinians inside Palestine. We have also inside 1948 territories, and also in the West Bank and Gaza. What the Israelis are trying, and your guest was concentrating on that that Trump is trying to give everything Israel. But I guess Trump will want to get everything for himself, because he is.
Right, allow me to jump in there for the sake of time, sir. Our correspondent, right now, Gizmi Mishamad, is talking to Iran's foreign ministry. Let us go there and listen to what the foreign minister has to say.
Today is an important landmark day, a glorious day considering the intensity of the people's presence in rallies. I think we have a very understanding people and wise people. They do recognize the situation. It's clear that it's much more more crowded, and serious things have happened in the region since last Thursday. It's expected that, given the threats and pressure exerted on the Islamic Republic, people have beginning to feel that their presence is important in such a rally. It's the biggest power of the Islamic Republic is its power. We are moving ahead with reliance on our people, and this is the manifestation of people's presence in the arena. Besides the support for the Quds and the Arab people of Palestine and supporting the Palestinian cause, they have also manifest their presence, their powerful support, and this gives us compassionate and for us to move ahead in international arenas. Well, today the region is in a sensitive state. There are clashes in various regions, Yemen, Lebanon, and the Islamic Republic is closely monitoring monitoring these events. And I have close contacts with foreign ministers of other countries. Diplomacy should be applied to reduce expansion of struggles. And we do understand that the Zionist regime is seeking to spread unrest throughout the region, and this has been seen in various countries in the region. And there have been warnings have been given to, we have given warnings to other countries to be wise of their movements. We are moving ahead with detente to find the diplomatic solutions, and we do understand that they will never be successful in materializing their ambitions in the future. Thank you very much.
Those are the words from the Iranian foreign minister. I'm going to go and talk back with Mohsen Saleh, academic and political analyst, joining us from Beirut. Sorry to interrupt you, sir. My question is, as you were probably listening to what the foreign minister of Iran was just saying, he said that aside from the support of Palestine and the express of solidarity with the people of Palestine, this was sort of a response of the Iranian public, Iranian people, to the threats of the West and the US in particular. How do you see that?
Well, I guess the Iranian people from the outset of the revolution, they have no feeling of fear or scary from the Western threats to Iran, and they are challenging this political agenda of the Americans and the Western countries, especially the European Union, who are supporting and supplying the Israeli entity with all kinds of weapons and arms, and especially the economic situation. So we are talking here about two teams, let's to say, or two parties, the Israeli and the belonging to the Western political agenda, and also Iran, the revolution, and the resistance movements in the region, from Yemen to Lebanon to Palestine, of course, and in Iraq. Of course, this battle and this war won't end, but the peoples of the region, especially in Iran, who are stand still behind the Palestinian issue, supporting the Palestinian people and the Palestinian movements. So we are witnessing a very historical and critical moment in this modern history about the situation in Palestine. The Israelis could not really fix themselves or affirm their entity for long. They could not, because of the Iranian influence, Iranian revolution slogans, and also participation in the battle. So we are seeing this kind of compassionate and emotional and feelings and also convictions. So we have here the great conviction of the Iranian leadership and the Iranian people that the Palestinians, they have the right to defend themselves and also to liberate their land in order to live in their homeland. So where would they go? To Europe or to other places and live as a second in the hierarchy, in the rank of the peoples there. The Americans, they are trying to kick all the foreigners from especially the Muslim world, and Trump issued a creed that preventing prohibiting the Muslims from going to the United States, especially who are supporting and try to talk about Palestine and Palestinian resistance. So we are with this unity, belonging to the first question, that with this unity of the peoples of the region and their feeling and their culture and their doctrines of understanding that, so who is the enemy and who is the friend, we can really move towards a new phase of the battle against this entity implanted by the West in order to make this partition, make this problem in the region.
Thank you so much for your time. Indeed, interesting to get your insight into the matter, Mr. Mohsen Saleh, political analyst and academic, joining us from Beirut. Well, let us not forget what this all is about. It's all about Al-Quds and Palestine. Let us go to the West Bank and talk to our correspondent, Naka Hamed. Naka, what are the latest situation there?
Yes, we are standing now into the closest point that we could get over here in Qalandia checkpoint, which is to the north of occupied Al-Quds, where thousands of Palestinians have been trying to go into occupied Al-Quds to perform the prayers of the last Friday in the holy month of Ramadan, where people over here call it the Orphan Friday. And this is actually something that has reflected itself, this name has reflected itself upon the situation over here. Unfortunately, due to the closures and due to the checkpoints, the increasing checkpoints, and due to the security measures that have been taken by the Israeli forces and by the Israeli regime, thousands of Palestinians were not able to reach to their holy city. But despite that, we are witnessing thousands that are trying to go into occupied Al-Quds. Unfortunately, many of them are being sent back through this checkpoint, which is considered to be one of the most extreme checkpoints of the West Bank over here, as it is. It has multi layers of inspection, and even that many Palestinians that we have been speaking to, many of them, they have a permit. They have a permit. They were sent. They were sent back. They were not allowed to go into occupied Al-Quds. As you have said, this is a reminder about what is this all of this thing, all of these atrocities, all of these all of this escalation is about. It is indeed about occupied Al-Quds, as we are witnessing unprecedented levels of displacing Palestinians and demolishing Palestinian homes, an unprecedented level of increasing the Israeli settlements inside occupied Al-Quds in an attempt. This is actually a very vicious attempt to change the face and the identity of the holy city from Arab, Muslim, Palestinian towards to Jewidize it more and more. And these actions have been taken inside occupied Al-Quds silently, as of course people over here in the West Bank are facing the IOF raids from one side, the settler violence from another side, and these silent wars from the third side. As for example, the best example to say over here is what is happening inside occupied Al-Quds. We are talking about thousands of cases of home detaining or home detention, thousands of cases of Palestinians being captured for doing nothing, only for simply maybe sitting in the Damascus Gate. And we are talking also about thousands of families that have been displaced from inside occupied Al-Quds. 1,000 Palestinian homes have been demolished inside occupied Al-Quds for the last year only. And of course, as the far-right minister Bezalel Smotrich have said repeatedly, that the escalation in the settlement expansion inside occupied Al-Quds and inside the West Bank will be unprecedented, will be escalating rapidly, as they call this year, 2025, the year of settlement expansion and the year of demolishing Palestinians. This is actually something that the day of Al-Quds, the International Day of Al-Quds, stands against firmly, that Palestinian people over here are not standing alone. This is not the case of the Palestinian people alone. This is the case of everyone who has integrity and who is aligned with their humanity and their what they believe in, freedom and equality. This is something that many nations and many countries have failed in for the last 60 months of relentless genocide upon the Palestinian people. This is something that many nations have failed, and other nations have excelled in supporting the Palestinian people. The day of Al-Quds represents a shout into the world to say that no matter what the de facto situation, no matter what the Israeli forces impose, strategies and policies and restrictions, no matter, despite all of these, Palestinians over here are supported by freedom-loving nations, and they have a voice and they are heard all over the world. This is an initiative. This is a true initiative, heartwarming for Palestinians, that have been initiated in 79, but the understand that how it is impact. It is very impactful over here and through the Muslim nations, as this is actually something that Palestinians are very proud of, and this is something that makes Palestinians feel the day of the International Day of Al-Quds makes Palestinians feel less abandoned and feel less and feel that even if the West, the Western world has turned their backs on the Palestinians and their agonies over here in the occupied territories, the rest of the world, other nations are not turning their back, are actually, just as we are seeing, they are rallying and gathering firmly, and they are actually making a stand despite paying a high price for that honorful stand, paying a high price of sanctions, of many other punishments and attacks, as we are seeing, for example, now what's happening in Yemen, the relentless attack on Yemen, and of course the sanctions that have been imposed on the Islamic Republic of Iran, other countries that like South Africa, for example. So the International Day of Al-Quds over here is well represented by the how to the extent that Palestinians are trying to be present inside their holy city and trying to defeat this idea and this strategy of the Israeli regime that is trying to expel Palestinians as much as they can, trying to limit the presence of the Palestinians. And despite all of what I have just described about the checkpoints, the barriers, the obstacles, and the banning of the Palestinians from going into occupied Al-Quds and making prayers inside the holy mosque of Al-Aqsa, just 2 days ago in the 27th night of the holy month of Ramadan, 180,000 Palestinians were able to defy all of these obstacles and go into their capital. This is something that we are seeing for our own eyes now.
Right.
We have just made an interview with an elderly 70 years old man who have been sent back 5 times, and he is willing to be sent back yet another 5 times, and he is saying that this is crucial, this is essential for the Palestinians to be present in their holy city.
Indeed, Nako, it is indeed brutal, and it is very important to pay attention to every detail. Thank you for your great reporting once again. Right now I am joined by Mick Napier, co-founder of Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, joining us from Glasgow. Very good to have you, Mick Napier. I want to talk to you about the Quds Day's contribution to international movements for justice and human rights. How do you believe events like the International Quds Day have helped the raise and the rise of such movements around the world?
When we view the horror, the barbarism of Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, we know this has been a depth of depravity that many people watching it around the world have been shocked and horrified by. We understand that Israel wishes to obliterate not just the Palestinian people from Palestine, but even the memory of their being there. And the Western powers have lined up behind Israel very, very strongly. And they try to persuade the Palestinians that they have no hope, that the forces organized against them are so powerful that they are doomed to defeat. In that situation, Al-Quds Day is the antidote to that. It sends a message to the Palestinians, and more than the Palestinians, that there is resistance, and that resistance is the way in which Zionism can actually be defeated. I think your viewers may remember when Netanyahu recently met with Trump. And Trump, because he was just becoming the president, he was inaugurated, he had a big ceremony, he had theatricals to deal with. He ordered Netanyahu to stop the killing or to reduce the killing from its very high level. Netanyahu jumped when he was told to jump by Trump. Later, Trump gave him a green light to continue the killing. But we can see where the real power lies, that this is not just a barbaric settler colonial regime. This is a regime which knows that its headquarters are in Washington and it has to do what it's told. So it's a very dangerous time, very dangerous. And public demonstrations of support for the Palestinians are absolutely vital, a determination to resist from Iran, from Yemen, from Lebanon, obviously from inside Palestine. All of these give the Palestinians and others the power, the confidence to resist. You have to be inspired by the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, in Jenin, and elsewhere. You have to be inspired by Ansar Allah in Yemen, daring to take on the full might of American power and not be bullied and intimidated. So everywhere we see the fire of resistance burning, that is a contribution to the ultimate solution, which is the defeat of this vile project. I mean, Israel is not as strong as it seems. Even some years ago, a man who was briefly American president, Israeli president, Avram Burg, he appealed to all Israelis to get a second passport. He said Zionism was a disaster. He had been an ardent Zionist. He was briefly president of Israel, but he appealed to Israelis to get out. He appealed to them to get a second passport. He had got a French passport and moved to France. Israel has a great weakness, and that weakness is something which we have to work on. Because, I mean, you introduced this section by saying we have to look at the detail, and the detail is endlessly horrific. But I think we also have to come out and look at the big picture. The big picture is that not just since Al-Aqsa flood, not just for the last 10, 20 years, the Zionist project has always been public and open that they want to remove Palestinians from Palestine. And that does not exempt the Al-Aqsa Mosque. I mean, the Israelis are planting European trees across Palestine. They're destroying over 1 million olive trees. They want Palestine to be a part of Europe, climatically, botanically, geographically. It's absurd, but it's very clear what they're trying to do. They want to obliterate all memory of the Palestinians and Arabs and Muslims having lived there. And therefore, the Al-Aqsa Mosque is part of their target. And if the resistance does not grow to the level of defending the Palestinians, including the Al-Aqsa Mosque, then the future is horrific. But there's nothing secret about this. The Zionists have been public from the beginning of their movement about their intention. They are still public. The hideous creatures like Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they may seem new in terms of Zionism, but the impetus towards genocide, the impetus towards ethnic cleansing, has been a constant of Zionism since its very foundation. Sometimes accelerated, sometimes slowed down a little bit because they look at world politics and they look for a green light, or sometimes not such a green light, from Washington. But who can say that they don't know what's happening? There's nothing that Israel can do. I mean, where else in the world, I don't want to offend your viewers, but this is the reality. Where else in the world has there ever been a state where prominent politicians will demonstrate publicly for the rape of Palestinian prisoners? It doesn't get any worse in the whole of human history when you now the Israelis have an industrial scale torture industry. We see the Palestinians who have managed to be released because of resistance efforts. They're hungry. Their bones are sticking out. They've all been tortured. And we hear reports that Israel has a special program to smash the hands of Palestinian surgeons so that they cannot use those hands and those skills to save lives. So the horror is there. The Western complicity is there. Al-Quds Day, the mobilization of such numbers and the coordination around the world, is a hope and a sign that Zionism can ultimately be defeated.
Right, Mick. I want to focus a little bit on the U.S. support for Israel and the Israeli regime and its atrocities in Palestine. Well, we hear this a lot in these days, that wherever Israel goes, US seems to follow. But can the US support for Israel still be considered strategic alliance, or is it more like contribution to crimes against humanity?
The Palestinian who was elected recently by the students at Glasgow University, Hassan Abu Sitta, a surgeon, a man who saves lives, and he's quite right when he says we shouldn't talk about an alliance so much. We shouldn't talk about America helping the genocide. We should talk about an axis of genocide. I think we should call it a coalition of genocide, Israel, America, and my own government, the United Kingdom, because they are working together to achieve Israeli goals. The Royal Air Force has flown over Gaza, literally hundreds of times during the genocide, supplying intelligence and information to Israel as it goes about the genocide. When America briefly stopped the delivery of 2,000-pound bombs, which Israel had exhausted the supplies of by dropping on Gaza, Israel said that this was going to be a serious problem in stopping them continuing with what they were doing. So I don't think we're dealing with a normal alliance between states. I think we're dealing with something that's more profound. It's a commitment led by Washington to carry out the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Now, I think the British would rather not kill every Palestinian, but Israel's determined to drive them all out. America's determined to give them the means to do so, and the British government is playing its part, not on the sidelines, but very much as an active partner. So can this be defeated? Yes. I think looking forward, I mean, there are many Iranians watching this, and they will know from their own history that America supported the Shah of Iran while they were murdering lots of Iranians. But when the Shah began to fail, as long as he seemed to be able to crush the people, America was 100% in support. You couldn't see any fault line. But as soon as he began to fail, then America dumped him very, very quickly. And for America, and for Britain as well, there is only one crime. It's not mass murder, it's not torture, it's not obliterating schools and hospitals and water and electricity. It's failure. And if Israel fails to defeat the resistance, America, at some time in the future, will drop it. And I would point out one thing. Trump is politically the most pro-Israel president we've seen. But remember, back in 2016, when Trump was running for office for the first time, he was very critical of Israel. He was very much America first. We don't want to send money abroad to anybody. And he was saying, why are we giving so much money to Israel? He was very hostile to Israel. And it didn't do him any harm with his support. But when he decided he needed the funding from billionaires like Adelson and other Zionists and pro-Israel billionaires, he changed his tune. But Trump is not committed to Israel in any way except as something to help him. And if Israel ceases to help him, Trump will have no problem in dropping Israel like a heartbeat.
Right, as our viewers are watching the magnificent view of the people observing the Friday prayers in Isfahan in the beautiful Imam Square, let us go back to Maryam Azarche, our correspondent in the studio. Maryam, how do you think that the timing of Quds Day during Ramadan add to its spiritual and symbolic impact?
I mean, Quds Day and support for the oppressed is very much a part of Islam that cannot be separated from Islam. Now, Ramadan is a very important month because, I mean, Muslims are trying to reorganize their life around their belief. Islam is not a kind of religion that, you know, you go one time to a religious place to worship once a week, you know, and basically that will be it. Islam is supposed to have an impact in every aspect of your life. The kind of food you eat, from the kind of food you eat to the kind of governments that you stand with. And this is, it's a perfect month for this focus on Islam in every aspect of life. Also, it's a very difficult time in some sense because especially at times where Ramadan falls during summer, because we have millions of people who are fasting. They're not drinking or eating for long hours, and they would walk in Iran, you know, especially in the beginning years where it was mostly only held in Iran. They would walk for hours, you know, showing their solidarity. They could not drink, you know, until the evening. And this is another type of hardship. Also, fasting in itself is supposed to remind you, one of the goals of the fasting, one of the stated goals, is that it's to remind you of the lesser fortunate who do not have access to food, who do not have access to drinking water. You're supposed to think of the oppressed, therefore be inspired to help them more because you're more capable of putting yourself in their shoes. And this is very much a tool to remind Iranians and to remind people of the world what their Palestinian brothers and sisters are going through. This Ramadan, Palestinians, especially in Gaza, they did not have food or water or electricity, you know, and they were under siege. And many other Ramadans as well, they have been basically surviving on very little. We know that the number of calories that are allowed to enter Gaza are even restricted. So many restrictions on various food items, you know. And in this latest round of genocide, it has reached its peak. So you cannot, Muslims across the world cannot consider themselves Muslims, as they are fasting, but they know that their brothers and sisters fasting, that they're not capable of basically feeding their families, that children are starving to death, babies are starving to death, and this is a man-made crisis that they could do something about. They know that their leaders, you know, in different Muslim countries, they know that their leaders are accomplices in this crime, and that they cannot just stand and watch and call themselves Muslims. So Ramadan is a very special time for this remembrance, but also for other people who actually, I mean, they don't have this religious background. You know, the fact that there is a Quds Day, that there is a reminder of the struggle, and that this struggle is actually very much international. I mean, we very seldom talked about what the Zionist regime is doing in Africa, you know, with the illegal arms trade, facilitating the murder and massacres in Africa, causing division and thereby stealing their diamonds, stealing their resources. And the diamond industry in Israel contributes at least $1 billion a year to the IOF. So, you know, it's a struggle for everyone. And the Quds Day is actually a very good time to remind everybody of this international struggle that we have against the Western hegemonic front, the child of which is Zionism. But more so for Muslims because of their their religious teachings, is that they simply cannot stand by and look.
Well, thank you, Mayam. Let us now go on the ground again in Tehran and talk to Gisu Mishahmad, your reporter. Gisu, what have you got for us?
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, you have listen to our live coverage of international Quds Day rallies and marches throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran. We've had millions, literally millions of Iranians took part in rallies and marches today in support of oppressed Palestinians. The Iranian marchers vociferously condemned the Zionist regime of Israel and Israel's ongoing genocide, particularly in the Gaza Strip. Today is International Quds Day, the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan. Palestinians Iranian marchers and rallygoers shouted their support for oppressed Palestinians. And it's not just in Iran, of course. Today, the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, is World Quds Day, International Quds Day. In many countries, we've seen literally around the world, millions, tens of millions of people are taking part in these marches and rallies throughout the world. And indeed, these rallies are going on not just in Muslim countries, but throughout the world, in Europe, in the United States itself, in North America, and in Africa and elsewhere. We've seen today millions of people are literally taking part in international God's Day rallies and marches in support of Palestinians. This has been our live coverage of international God's Day rallies and marches. We now go back to our regular programming.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis on the most important Islamic concepts and teachings. I am Atta, the host of this program. Within the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Brother Alavian. Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Alavian, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's discussion, we want to talk about another type of mystical Irfani concept, and that is riyaza or riyazatun nafs. Roughly, it can be translated as to purification of the soul or asceticism. So it has different meanings. Even non-Islamic schools of thought, some of them are very much famous in order to do asceticism, have an ascetic lifestyle. But what does it mean according to Islamic teachings? We want to discuss it today. Brother Alavian, first of all, define for us what is riyaza.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Riyaza or asceticism actually means tolerating the hardships or living the desires. And definitely what we call desires here are